Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And now, are you effing kidding me? With JoJo from Juries.
I want to talk about something that's been on my mind for quite a while. You see, there are some Democrats out there who are saying they just can't seem to bring themselves to vote for Joe Biden. They may not even vote at all. And look, I like Joe Biden a lot. Confessedly, I like him more than a lot of people who like him. And even I don't think he's perfect. I don't think he's the most interesting man in the world. I don't think he's the funniest or the most clever. And look, I think we can all agree that Joe Biden circa 1979 was hot as fuck. But let's be real, that ship sailed decades ago. And it's never mattered. It doesn't matter now. He's never been exciting. He's never kept us guessing. He's never done anything or said anything where any one of us walked away thinking, wow, who was that man? I've never seen that side of him. He's a consistent guy. He's the guy who does and says the things you expect him to do and say. He's been around. He's done pretty much all the things there are to do. And through all of it, he's still been, well, Joe. He's not the Beatles or Elvis. He's not JFK, Bill Clinton, or Obama. I've met him, humble brag. I described him as smelling like hot chocolate on a snowstorm night, and I got rightfully destroyed for it. But here's the thing. That is pretty fucking accurate, even though I was more than a bit tipsy on, holy shit, I just met the president, bubbly at the time. But let's use some metaphors, as I'm very fond of them. And let's just say you're someone who takes the bus. And on this particular day, you would like to take the bus to the mall. So the first bus arrives. It's a bus you've been on 1,000 times. It runs slow. Its paint job has lost its shine. The fabric on the seats is worn in patches, and it can mutter and sputter on occasion. But it always gets you to the mall. You've never ever wondered if it's not going to get you to the mall. And it's safer than just about any other vehicle out there. And then the second bus arrives, screeching as it slows just enough to allow you to climb aboard without ever fully stopping, because it's the bus from the movie Speed. And it, like, can't stop. The tires are smoking, the driver is sweating buckets, Ronnie Jackson is handing out fentanyl like it's Pez, someone who looks a hell of a lot like Putin appears to be buying nuclear secrets back by the bathroom, and there's a really, really good chance you won't survive at all, let alone get to the mall, but the ride will be exciting as fuck. So, which bus do you choose? Would you wait around for another bus? A mystery bus? The best bus? A bus you saw once and thought, that's a nice bus. That should be the mall bus. A bus with a familiar name without knowing if it even has the capacity to get to the mall at all? We don't want the bus from Speed. No one wants that bus except for the bad guys. And because my English teacher also told me 1,000 times to stop killing the hell out of a metaphor and I'm a slow learner, I'll just keep right on going with this one to say that there is no other bus coming right now. We have one bus. We have to get on that bus. It's not a perfect bus. No bus is. But it's going to take us to the damn mall like it's been doing. And maybe you're not going to get the mani-pedi bus or the party bus or the wild sex orgy bus of your wildest and clearly weirdest dreams. But you can pick a whole new bus when this one is taken out of the mall rotation in a few years. Or you can choose the Speed bus and never get to pick another bus again. And if you're waiting around for the perfect bus, you're really just picking the bus with the bomb on board. So what good does that do? Look, you have Joe Biden. You don't have to date him. You don't have to fuck him. You're not having his baby. In him, you have an actual leader. He's familiar. He's warm and welcoming. He's sane. He's safe. He's steady. He has experience. He cares about the people, and he knows what he's doing. Isn't that what we want in a president? Okay, maybe not always. Maybe we've needed to shake things up from time to time. We've needed to test the status quo. We've needed, yes, we can, and ask not what your country can do for you. And those presidents have been who we needed when we needed them. But that isn't right now. Right now, especially right now, we still need steady. We still need safe. We need someone who knows the path and carries the light so we can all follow behind. No fanfare, no hijinks, no malarkey, if you will. We've seen 4 years of exciting with Trump. And by exciting, I mean waking up every morning reeling from the insanity of the night before and bracing for the craziness of the day ahead. What would this unhinged madman be using our taxpayer dollars to do next? What would he say next? Who would he offend next? Who would he strip of their fundamental human rights next? What autocrat would he defend next? What weather map would he sharpie next? Okay, that one didn't keep me up at night. Actually, cracked me the fuck up. But when you think about it, it is pretty terrifying because we're talking about the person who could launch nuclear war if left to wait too long for his 87th Diet Coke. So anyway, Trump mocked reporters, demeaned military widows, trafficked in racism, sexism, xenophobia, transphobia, Islamophobia. The guy did everything he could to make windmill phobia a thing, for fuck's sake. And as silly as that little vignette about the buses may be, it's actually kind of that simple in the end. People need to chill out. Joe Biden doesn't have to be your dream date. He has to be a guy who is going to continue to steward this country well, safely and competently. And he wants good things for us. He's gotten massively good things done for us. And he is not interested in taking this democracy over the side of a cliff. He wants to get us to the next torch holder. New metaphor. That's right. Fuck yeah, it is. And here comes another one. We've had 4 years of him keeping us on solid ground. And we get 4 more years of him making sure the foundation is sound. The cracks are repaired. The immediate threat to democracy vanquished. If only for now. So that he can pass the torch that's still lit to the next generation. And in that race, we can duke it out over who we think is best. The people decided on Joe, and they will choose someone new in 2028. But we got to get to 2028 intact first, or what we're going to get is day one dictator and an autocratic future of Supreme Commander Trumps in line of succession for generations. Joe doesn't sizzle, and he doesn't make everyone happy all the time. But because we live in an age where everyone thinks they need to be happy all the time, that's what some think they'll find in someone else. But they won't. And if they're willing to hand the keys to a sociopathic, despot, curious, crazy person or something which doesn't exist, they'll never get a thing they want, let alone all the things they want. We gotta get on the bus that is right in front of us. It's gonna get us where we need to go. And maybe, just maybe, it'll get us to the mall where some handsome feller with icy blue eyes, a $1 billion dog rescue, and an addiction to giving foot rubs awaits. But we all gotta get on the damn bus. It's a solid bus. And it's not on fire. It's all gonna be okay. Just please, get on the bus.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
My guest today is Joel Rubin, former Deputy Assistant Secretary of State and current Democratic strategist. Joel is an expert on the Middle East region. He's an expert on national security. He's an expert on a whole host of things. And he's exactly the right person to talk to in this moment. His insight is absolutely invaluable, and I am so incredibly grateful to the universe that I get to call him a friend. This is an extremely illuminating, but also, if I dare say, a little bit funny of interview, because we got to keep things a little bit funny and to stay sane. I truly hope you enjoy. Welcome back to the Are You Effing Kidding Me podcast. Joel Rubin, my friend, I am so happy to be talking to you right now because I have a zillion trillion questions about what is going on in the world. You are the exact person I want to talk to in this moment and the world should be listening to in this moment. So let's start, please, with, okay, I hate that I'm dubious of Mike Johnson when Mike Johnson says things that sound reasonable and responsible
right.
and respectable and like rational, but he said last night he doesn't care what Marjorie Taylor Greene or Chip Roy or Tom Massey or anybody else has to say about vacating the chair. He is going to move ahead with four bills, including aid for Ukraine. What did he say? $61 billion, right? Is that right? Is that mm-hmm. my math right? $23 billion for Israel.
26.
There's 26. There's $9 billion in humanitarian aid.
Oh yeah, $9 billion I'm sorry, I'm being a dork.
Oh, that's okay. But okay, no. But this is what I want to know. So, but the humanitarian aid is a huge, huge thing. We don't want
very
people
important.
To miss. There's a fourth bill. You'll explain hopefully. There's an initiative to use Russian money, Russian money. To pay for some of this shit.
Yeah.
So,
first
of all, did Mike Johnson, was there like an abduction? Is somebody holding his brain hostage or his missing son hostage?
Who is this guy?
Yeah. Am I having a fever dream? Is this a trick? I don't know what. Okay, let's start with where is this coming from? Does he mean it, please?
Well, you know, the snark in me would say even a broken clock can be right twice a day. But I might go a little further. I think that this is Mike Johnson, shall we say, getting the shit scared out of him by the national security community briefings about what is about to take place if we do not provide this aid to our allies in Ukraine and Israel and in East Asia. And he sits there and he's like, oh God. And let me explain what I mean by that. When I was the senior official in the State Department for Secretary Kerry in the Obama administration, in charge of our work with the House of Representatives, my job was to organize briefings in classified settings for members of Congress, amongst many other duties. That meant literally going to the Speaker's office with the intelligence community, the State Department, the Defense Department, primarily some other agencies if necessary, and having small briefings in a classified setting and exactly what the intelligence community is seeing and what our diplomats are recommending and what our Pentagon is worried about. And when you sit in that room, and there's 20 or 30 people in there, it's real. All the lights are gone. You know, there's no cameras. There's no idiots like Marjorie Taylor Greene screaming in on Twitter. There's literally nothing but human beings getting real information. And so what I heard in his language last night in that clip where he basically said, these are bad guys, Putin, Xi, the leaders of Iran, like these are bad guys. And I am a wartime speaker. What I heard was somebody who got the memo that this is essential to American national security. And he said, you know, I'm done. That's what I'm doing. And I think it's nice when the system works and real information gets into the head of the policymakers and they do the right thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to me that it's
stunning,
right? That it took this long to get him to this position because
embarrassing.
Right.
Sorry.
But no. But here's my fundamental question too, because obviously, as you know, this flies in the face of everything. Obviously, Marge at all, but Donald Trump would like from Mike Johnson, who we have up until this point believed, rightfully so, you know, was in his pocket.
Let me see if I can peel this back a little further. A lot of the morons that are out there, like Marjorie Taylor Greene,
Matt Gaetz,
you know, Matt Gaetz,
Jim Jordan,
Trey Neils. I mean, I don't know, Jim Jordan, like Freedom Caucus. Oh God, so many of these people, they don't sit on the key national security committees that actually look at the intelligence and the national security implications of what is happening right now in the world. And so they're out of it. And they're just gadflies. Think about it. Like you're in high school and you're sitting in the cafeteria and you're a member of the football team. The football players are there and they're talking about preparations for the game, you know, on Friday night. And they're all coordinating and sharing ideas on plays. And then you have a bunch of fans on the outside who don't play, who don't go to practice, who don't work out, and they're sitting there and just shouting, you should do this, you should do that, you should. Like, they don't know anything. They're completely out of it. Stupid, moronic, and disconnected. And they're the outsiders. And yet, in our politics, the outsiders, of course, have a role. They have a vote. The thing that breaks my heart about this, though, when you bring up Donald Trump, is that this guy got classified briefings for 4 years. And what did he do at the end of it? He stole the documents so he could show it off to our enemies, right? So, like, this is crazy town. But Johnson, at some level, I think, recognized that he truly was in a position to enable us to protect our allies and our national security, our tank it, and then he would have to live with the consequences. And I think he was able to put out the noise, but he blew it, man. He should have done this 5-6 months ago. He should have ignored Trump when Trump said, strip out the border security bill. Now all these Freedom Caucus guys are complaining, there's no border security. What are you talking about? You opposed it, right? Yeah. And then it ends up, guess what? Biden gets exactly what he wants. Joe Biden wins. Joe Biden got what he asked for last fall. He will get it by the end of the week in the House and then next week in the Senate when they have to kind of, you know, repass it because the language is a little different. So you can't send two separate bills to the president to sign. They have to reconcile them to one single bill that then goes to the president's desk. So Biden wins.
Well, and that's the irony, right? Because Joe Biden understands those institutions. Oh, did I freeze? Those institutions better than just about anybody, probably anybody, maybe other than Nancy Pelosi, although she's never served in the executive. So he has that, right? He has that going for him. And he did strategically, if you look at it this way, like Sleepy Joe, he played the long game with these fuckers. Like, he is just that smart, honestly, that he understood.
This is his expertise.
Correct.
This is his expertise.
Right. Yeah. They could spin their wheels for so long. He knew if they ever wanted to get anything done at all, ultimately he was going to have to come back to, you know, what he had already proposed, because they got an election coming up and they're going to be like, oh, shit.
You know, the legislative process, the thing that's very important to understand is that it's a repetitive game and it keeps on flowing. And because bills, when introduced, live for the entirety of the session, that means they have a 2-year lifespan. So this was introduced in the fall of last year. That meant that Biden, he had like 14, 16 months to get it done. So they could just keep on banging and banging. The Republicans can't vote no and it's dead. It can get resubmitted. It can keep, it's like the zombie back to life. Right. And so to your point, Biden, you know, President Obama had Biden as his secret ace in the hole negotiator. Whenever we were like near shutdowns, he would sneak up to Capitol Hill and work with Mitch McConnell, cut a deal, keep the government open behind Ted Cruz's back, right? Because Ted Cruz was, you know, Mr. Nihilist, let's destroy the whole thing, the worst man in Washington. So Biden always outfoxed him. Biden is at his core a legislator, 50 years of it, experience basically. And yeah, to your point, Johnson, yeah, he's a rookie, he's learning on the job, but the inability to pass it didn't mean it was dead. And it keeps on coming, and the political pressure now, and after these attacks by Iran over the weekend, just got to get it done.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you.
Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The calculus for Mike Johnson clearly was impacted by what feels like it was 10 years ago, but was just last weekend, with the attacks on Israel by Iran. What, 300 missiles, I think, is that right? Like, is that something like
330
that?
Missiles and drones. Yeah.
Yes.
Kamikaze drones, bombers. Yeah.
It obviously, it put some fire under his ass for this to move, because everyone is expecting it. But also there's the Ukraine component. I want to get to that as well. But let's talk about how that did change the calculus for him, for everybody, for the conversation. But also, does he have the support? And what does that support look like when you're talking about the crackhead caucus trying to, you know, most to vacate his speakership? So let's.
Well, no appropriations for crack in this right. bill, unfortunately. So Marjorie's going to have to get her fixed somewhere else.
Sorry, Marjorie. Call Don Jr. or Ronnie Jackson. Yeah. All right. Let's start with how did what happened? Okay. Well, actually, which.
Okay. Backing you all the way back.
Let's start. Right.
I know where you're going.
What happened last weekend? How we got there, briefly, top line stuff, you know, how we got there, and then how we got from there to here. And then from here, how do we go to aid for Israel, Ukraine, the humanitarian aid, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
So there's like an axiom that a lot of people who work on national security in the Middle East space talk about in D.C., which is there's like two Middle East conflicts. There's one in the real world out there, Palestine, Israel, Iran, Iraq, you know, that stuff. And then there's the one in Washington, which is all the political shenanigans. Rarely do they intersect, but when they do, boom. Mm-hmm. And that's what just happened over the weekend. What just happened over the weekend is... Quick summary is that Iran conducted a massive aerial attack against the state of Israel, sending several hundred missiles, intercontinental ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, as well as drones towards Israel, towards cities, towards military facilities, towards Jerusalem. And they were about 99% shot down by the United States, by Israel, predominantly by Jordan, Saudi Arabia, and other Arab states who were supporting in that effort, and the UK and France as well. And so Israel is now determining whether or not to return volley. And the president has said, don't do it. What the precursor was to this assault was an April 1st attack by Israel into Damascus, a strike killing seven top leaders of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the IRGC. It's Iran's Praetorian Guard. And this is the entity that is mobilizing proxy groups across the Middle East. And this general was in Damascus meeting with the leader of Hezbollah in southern Lebanon, talking about facilitation, whatever, war planning, who knows. Hezbollah is the primary military threat to Israel right now on its northern border. And about 100,000 Israelis have been displaced from their homes due to Hezbollah bombing into northern Israel. So a lot going on. Israel saw a target of opportunity. They hit them in Damascus. And it appears that the Israelis didn't anticipate that the Iranians would be that upset. And there's been a lot of tit for tat, and they figured there would be something similar coming back at them. The Iranians were really upset. And so they showed it. We're now in a moment of suspended animation. Questions abound about will Israel retaliate? What will they do? I have theories on what could occur. But that's where we are. So in that moment after it, Biden basically said to Bibi, take the win, hold back. And that it, there's a lot of reasons, but it's a politically genius argument because the money that's pending, and you know, Biden's thinking about all these pieces because they're all important. They all intersect. They all come together. Amongst progressives in particular, and on the Democratic side, there's a lot of reticence to supporting the Israel aid without conditions, certainly, but overall as well. And if Israel had responded or has in this period, and Netanyahu gets Washington politics better than probably most any other foreign leader, in terms of, he just understands it. It's his thing, for better or worse, for worse a lot of time.
Yeah.
But it could create friction. I think that Democrats now in the House, you're going to see a lot of Democrats voting against the Israel aid bill because it's broken down into separate bills and they'll be unified in one package for final passage to go to the Senate. And you'll see a lot of Republicans vote against Ukraine. So you'll have these weird combos to get to passage. But what that means is that the intensity on Johnson increased. And one small nugget, and I'll pause after this, is that the Christians United for Israel, CUFI, John Hagee's group, the basically the pro-Israel lobby amongst the fundamentalist evangelical community, conducted an emergency fly-in this week to demand that they move forward on the Israel aid. And Johnson, he speaks in tongues. Those are his people.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's his game. Those are his people. And basically, Hagee and his people said, enough is enough. Move it. And that's the political cover he needs to maintain his position. I think he'll survive any vote to get him out. So basically, it just inserted another level of urgency. And frankly, Israel is probably not going to do anything to upset the apple cart until after the final vote in the bill is signed. That would be my bet.
Yeah, it's interesting because so much of the narrative sort of switched from even the loudest voices in the progressive, the far, far left, right, with this anti-Israel sentiment. So much of that conversation changed to, oh, okay, this is why we need to continue to support defensively, right? Like Israel, we need to.
Well, I wish that were the case, Joe, but I'll tell you, I think there's a lot of anger at Israel for being reckless is the argument. Huh. I wouldn't call it reckless. I would say it was provocative, uh-huh, what they did.
Yeah.
You know, when they struck IRGC leaders in Damascus, these are military targets. There are a lot of people on the side of the diplomacy related to Iran that complain that this was an embassy. It was not an embassy. And anyways, when you conduct military planning in a diplomatic facility, you're undermining the whole Vienna Conventions, the whole concept of diplomatic immunity. So I think, though, that you're right. I'm sorry to just go backwards on this. I think for a lot of the center-left Democrats, this now gives them a little more oomph, a little more push. Now, if Netanyahu would immediately respond back, maybe not so much. But Israel didn't just defend itself from those strikes over the weekend. They also regained some international clout because of it.
Mm-hmm. And what did that do to the Ukrainian conversation? So because now we're having a separate bill that will hopefully be attached to this larger bill that is Ukraine aid. 61 billion.
A massive amount of money.
They need really. It critically. Right. Like
they do.
Yeah.
And it's mostly going to go towards American production of munitions and military supply to go to Ukraine.
Which I don't think people talk about enough.
No.
I don't think, why? This is a huge thing. Like, this is, it helps our economy, not just helping defend democracy abroad.
Rebuilding our defense industrial base, working people's jobs, blue collar jobs. It's a really important component of the economy for a lot of communities around the country.
So, but finally, now, this Ukraine aid is coming back. Like you said, it never died. This has already been cleared through the Senate, right? In the fall.
Yeah.
So thankfully, Mike is on board. Is there the support for it? Is that going to happen?
I think a couple of things. One more thing to add, one of the subtle concerns about what occurred over the weekend from Iran is that they use drones that they're also exporting to Russia to use against Ukraine.
Jesus.
So there's a symmetry there. And Johnson made the argument that Russia and Iran are colluding. And frankly, he's right. Everyone knows it. Biden makes the argument too, but against Israel and Ukraine.
Yeah.
Right. And so there's a lot going on. And, I think the Democrats are going to overwhelmingly support this Ukraine aid. And I think the minority of Republicans will support it because this is like the classic moral hazard on a vote. They know it's going to pass, so the policy will be fine, but they don't want to face the wrath of their MAGA idiot voters. So they'll vote no on it and say they voted against it while they're secretly very happy that it passes.
Yeah. And Mike Johnson, did he?
Isn't that great?
Isn't
cowardice.
It?
Yeah, right there. Political cowardice.
Yeah, they're not exactly profiles in courage, that bunch. But did Mike Johnson use the words axis of evil, I think, when he was describing Iran, Russia, and China. I think he said axis of evil, which is like, I really do think it's invasion of the body snatchers. Like, who even is this guy? But yeah, okay, well, if they scared the bejesus out of him by showing him the truth, whatever it takes. I mean, I think, frankly, we should all be shown the truth, not to the point where it compromises our
national security. Well, you were scared over the weekend, I bet. I was scared.
Yeah.
You know, I put out a tweet like praying for limited casualties and no casualties. Like, it's really scary. And I know we communicate about this. Like, is this the beginning of World War III?
Yep.
Well, it could be.
Yeah.
Not yet. I mean, this is some scary shit. And, when policymakers look at that, it's on them. That's the crazy thing about politics. It's not a machine that makes the right decision for all of us. These are just human beings, literally human beings sitting in a room. And the American intelligence communities like pulls all this information together. And then there's like one guy who speaks it to one person who decides whether we have a vote.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Let's end this conversation with this question, because this was making the rounds all weekend, to which I made a video to respond because I don't like to be quiet, but they were pushing,
I miss the mean tweets. Things were peaceful. The world was so peaceful. There were no wars. This wouldn't have happened under Trump.
Garbage.
Bullshit. Like revisionist history bullshit. So I just wanted to talk about
gaslighting.
That. Right, gaslighting. Completely gaslighting.
Iran didn't do anything bad under Trump.
Oh, unless you count the 100-plus soldiers who have, he tried to pretend never had traumatic brain injuries. And, like, we didn't have foreign wars. Unless you count Afghanistan. Fine. But, like, again, let's talk about this difference. And this, first of all, the lie that we were more peaceful under Trump, that we would be more peaceful under Trump in the future, that he would have said some things to this side and some things to that side and everybody would have been fine. Like, versus Biden. Can you make, what's the difference between those two if we had this moment and looking forward?
So the tragedy of Middle East policy is there's a lot of finger pointing to make, right? You can do that all day long. But that doesn't mean that you don't do it because there are a lot of finger pointing opportunities. And in particular, two things Donald Trump did helped lead us to this horrifying situation that we're currently in right now. and they don't want to own it. And they say it all happened on Joe Biden's watch. We were, me included, publicly warning against these decisions. And I'll talk about them in a second, but explaining that they would lead to outcomes that we're now experiencing. And the Trump people all said, no, no, no. First one, most prominent one, pulling the U.S. out of the Iran nuclear deal in 2018. What that did, I liken it to pulling the plug out of the tub when all the water's in, it just rushes right through. That Iran nuclear deal took like 15 years of collective bipartisan, multi-administration pressure, sanctions, diplomacy to get to a point where we cut it and got it done with the Iranians, where they agreed to not advance their nuclear program and to get rid of it, basically, and be under international international inspection and control it. And that's something that was stuck and frozen and working, and verifiably so. Everybody has a problem with Iran having the potential for nuclear weapons. But when Trump pulled out of that, he essentially said to Iran, we're not going to monitor you anymore, and we're not going to abide by this. And he let them out of jail free. And they said, well, we'll do more sanctions or we'll bomb. All we've seen in this 5-6 years since is that Iran is now within a week of several nuclear bombs supply of fissile material. Whereas under the day he took office in 2016, when the deal was 2017 deal was working, it was a year for one, and there was inspection, and now there's no inspection. So think about what that means. That means that Iran just demonstrated they have the capacity to send missiles directly into Israel. They could load one of those with a nuclear warhead in the future. We don't need that headache. But now we have no constraints over the nuclear program. That's number one. So he's made this region infinitely more dangerous. Number two, real quick, because I know it was a long one, is the Abraham Accords, where Israel got peace with several Arab countries. And those, I believe, it's good to have those Abraham Accords and those agreements. But what he did in the process was essentially deny the Palestinians anything and said, we don't need the Palestinians. This is Jared Kushner special.
Didn't Jared Kushner make Middle East peace? He made peace in the Middle East.
Yeah. See the results. Results are that Palestinians basically felt completely sidelined. And they created a dynamic with the Palestinians that there was no window or opening for the Palestinians. And Joe Biden has tried to turn it around. But I do think that the Trump decision on the Palestinians to basically ignore them for those 4 years, to move away, and to he made a lot of things worse. I'll leave it at that. Essentially led to the kind of extremism and the growing extremism that we saw with the unacceptable Hamas attacks against Israel. Trump's not a peacemaker. He's a provocateur. Trump is a provocateur, a gaslighter, an arsonist, and the kind of person that should never have the keys to American national security ever again, because every decision he took has led to a more dangerous and volatile outcome. Ergo, Ukraine and Russia. Basically, allowing Vladimir Putin to believe that he could steal Ukraine and undermine NATO. And Joe Biden stood up, and now Donald Trump says, take it all to Vladimir Putin. This is what you get. There has been, and there will never be, I don't think, a more clarifying moment in the difference between Joe Biden and Donald Trump than what we saw over the weekend, where we saw an American president defend the state of Israel in order to protect its civilians from an offensive attack by Iran. And then you have Donald Trump saying, hey, Russia, conquer this American ally and take it and keep on going. All right. That's a different worldview. I don't think Donald Trump would have defended Israel either. I think he would have let the missiles go. And that would have been World War III.
I'm gonna have my coffee now. This is where people are like, oh, stop, calm down. You're being so dramatic. It's like, I'm not being dramatic. Like, I'm not being dramatic. This is literally serious shit.
It's actually happening. It's in the real world. This is not some little video game.
If you can get someone as freaky with an accountability partner's son like Mike Johnson to be like, oh, fuck, I better do something. Like, yes. You know, freaky shit. But what I want, I'm really curious, too, before we get to the rapid fire question round that has nothing to do with any of this. Right. What is
now
this?
I'm nervous.
So we've been seeing and hearing Trump's NATO comment in particular, not just that, but leading up to that, where it was like, yeah, you can do whatever the hell you want. What does this tell the rest of the world what does it tell our peer nations that are worried? What does it tell those vulnerable nations that are worried that America doesn't have their back anymore because we haven't had Ukraine's back? There's questions about whether or not we'll have Israel's back, or there have been. First of all, how important is it that not only were we involved with, you know, defending Israel against those Iranian missiles, but we're part of that giant coalition, right? Middle Eastern partners, as well.
Yeah, very
right?
interesting coalition.
England, yeah. France, I guess, right, too? So, so how important is this to our standing in the world? What does it tell those peer countries of ours? What does it tell those countries that are afraid and worried that we won't have their back? And conversely, again, versus what Donald Trump, what is Donald Trump telling the world to expect from us?
I think when this bill passes the House, gets through the Senate and to the president's desk, you might hear a global collective sigh of relief from around the world. The United States is the essential power right now in the world, defending American democracy here at home and defending global democracy abroad, defending security of our allies abroad, which defends our security here at home. There is no replacement. There is none. And when the United States looks like it's about to turn its back on that, run away, hide, hand off our allies to dictators, turn our back on our allies, let them get attacked and blown up, chaos ensues. There's this weird theory popping around Washington, which is that America is the cause of all the problems. Now, look, I can be an America critic. I have spent a lot of time in my life criticizing foreign policy made by American presidents, typically Republicans. But nonetheless, you know, that doesn't make me anti-American. I serve my country overseas as in the Peace Corps. I think that there are people, and you see it now happening on the hard left and the hard right, who basically have this idea that, oh, our presence causes the problems. We have 15 bases in the Middle East. It's because we're there that that's a problem. Are you fucking kidding me? Seriously? Do you think Iran and Israel attack each other because America is there? And like, maybe if America didn't support Israel, then Israel wouldn't exist and there wouldn't be problems. I mean, what kind of psychedelic drugs are you taking to mess with your brain to not be able to understand the reality that there's a country called Israel and there's a country called Iran and they don't like each other and they're dealing with it in dangerous ways? And so
not everything is about you.
Not everything is about you. That is the most arrogant sort of pro-American colonist attitude that I know.
Yeah.
Ooh, the whole world revolves around us, but it doesn't and it shouldn't, but it does. And I mean,
but what about me?
Brains, you know, scrambled eggs for brains is what I like to say. Okay.
Yeah.
So the short of it is this. Imagine if the United States was not there over the weekend. We would now have a hot war between Israel and Iran in a mega sense. And you know what? If we pull our military aid from Israel, you know what's going to happen to their military activity? Nothing. They're going to continue and they might go worse. So it's like, the world is an imperfect place and we have a role to play in it. And I fear that our politics is getting to this Pollyannish point where everyone, when talking about foreign policy, domestic political people in particular are like, oh, we need to have a magic bullet, that there's some simple answer. There is not a simple answer. What you need is a competent commander-in-chief who evinces and communicates American values and principles and security objectives and builds alliances to increase the peace and stand by our friends and protect our shores, right? You need competence at the top because there is no ever going to be a perfect world global panacea unless you're Mike Johnson and you're waiting for, you know, the Messiah to come, or I should say, because I'm Jewish. I only think Messiah. I don't know what they're asking for.
Rapture. I don't even gonna put it either.
The rapture. Yeah. But like, seriously, like Joe, like this idea that America is the cause of all the world's problems, is a really simplistic, nihilistic, childish, ignorant statement. We have a role to play and we should play it.
I mean, Amen to that. But also, I think just real fast, I think
was I harsh enough?
Oh no, I think that you just cut soundbite. Perfect. Wrap it up. We're done here. No, it's perfect. But I think the fact that you criticize America means you love America, because like that's when you love something. That's right. That's what it's that's when you want it to.
We should be fighting for a better American role in the world.
Yeah.
Not for no American role in the world.
Right. A fucking man to that. You hear that, friends? Get on the bus. You're not going to find a perfect president either. By the way, not going to have perfect global policy, world peace. You're never going to find your dream date president. So let's get over that too. Okay. You got one choice right now, folks. Now, with that
said, one of these candidates is on steroids and it really freaks me out because I don't want a guy on steroids running the White House.
I would just like a guy who doesn't describe the Battle of Gettysburg as beautiful and can manage to stay awake for 5 minutes straight without being juiced all the time. I mean, please, is the bar that low? Okay. We got.
Yes, apparently.
Yes, apparently. Jesus. Oh my God. Can he wipe his own butt though? Okay. That's my guy.
Well, but what do you mean by wipe?
Yeah, right, exactly. He wipes it. No, he might not wipe it, but the person who wipes it for him does it better than any butt wiper ever has. And he loves butts more than ever in the history of time. Okay, we've got 2 minutes, 3 minutes. I'm just going to go.
It's okay. I can stay talking.
I know how to pivot, bitch. I'm going to pivot to this has nothing to
we're
do
with. We're getting down and dirty on this stuff, Joe. This is good.
We're going to end. Yeah. This was actually not a depressing conversation. This was a very hopeful, forward-looking conversation. I'm ready to kick ass. Sign me up. Okay. Question. We're going to the rapid fire question round. Are you ready, Joel?
Okay. God, no. But whatever, right. I'll try.
I don't know. We got 2 minutes.
Oh, yeah. No. I mean, I'll try. But, you know,
it's not hard. You and I are approximately the same age. You, however, are in your 50s, which makes you 9,000 years old. And I'm still in my 40s, which makes me like, you know, like a tween. So that said,
so sweet.
You just celebrated your maniversary. You had your 40th anniversary of your bat. Which mitzvah?
Oh, bar mitzvah.
I am
to the world. I am 53. Yes, I am 53.
Which is, I'm joking. You're not 900, but to somebody who's 49, it's like, oh, how sweet. You're up there.
Are you really 49? Are you just saying you're 49 to keep that four in the number? You know, I don't know about this, Joe.
Jesus, God, Joel. I'm not supposed to say anything.
See, I'm showing my bad man manners. Sorry. You look 39. You look 39.
Thank you. I know. It's out says it's because I don't day drink except on the weekends. But all right. So question, because we are so close in age, we have probably a lot of the same foundational sort of like cultural references. Okay. So we're just gonna go with these really fast. So when you were a kid, let's try and go back to the dark ages. Pre-internet, pre-cell phones, pre-like reality, right?
We had phones plugged into walls.
Yeah. And you had to take the cord and stretch it. We didn't have cordless phones yet when we were little. Like, what? You had to take the cord across the
room. Remember trying to cook with that thing?
Oh, yeah. The cordless phone. And then you pick up the baby's monitor then a house next door. And sometimes you get good conversations, which, you know, but we didn't have party lines. So we're not that old. No offense to people who have party lines, because that's awesome. I know I didn't have one. But, okay, your favorite candy bar when you were a kid?
Snickers.
Snickers. That's a classic. Snickers satisfies. I'm Kit Kat. I don't know. Give me a break.
Kit Kat's pretty good. Hershey's. Yeah. Actually, at my grandparents, they would always spoil me, and they get big, thick Hershey's bars with almonds in them. Those were the winners.
That's classic.
The winner. Forget Snickers. That's the one.
Yeah, but I would put Reese's peanut butter cups in that mix because they're not a candy bar, but they are, you know.
And back then, they actually had real peanut butter. It was like the good stuff.
Although Reese's
for 25 cents.
Yeah, remember the commercial where they. Each other. I don't know. She's got chocolate or he's got chocolate. She's got peanut butter. And it's like two great tastes. Tastes great together. Okay. Moving faster. Favorite TV show when you were a kid?
MASH.
Oh, wow. I loved MASH too. By the way, the last episode is the saddest thing in the history of time.
Yes. And the number one watched episode of all time.
Oh my God. And what a fucking great cast. My favorite as a kid was Little House on the Prairie. That's weird, but it was. Whenever it was on, I would watch it.
I hated that show. I'm sorry. It was so slow.
So slow. God. And so, like, now looking back at it. So
I would think you're a MASH person. Like, Alan
I'm a MASH Alda, person
the,
now.
The wit. I mean, boom, well, yeah. Man.
No, Alan Alda's
comedy. Trapper John.
Yeah. But I'm talking little kid. Okay. But I got to MASH later in life. Really fast. Last one. Breakfast cereal.
Yeah.
Breakfast cereal. Last one. Because we got to go. Did you have breakfast cereal as a kid? Did they have that when you were alive, when you were a kid? Oh, shit.
I mean, it's so bad. It's so boring. Honey Nut Cheerios.
Oh, ooh, okay. Yeah, no, it's a classic, but that is boring. I'm going Lucky Charms or Boo Berry. But
oh, you're interesting. You know, but remember, give some to Mikey. He'll eat it.
Oh, my, Mikey, he likes it. Remember that urban legend that he had Pop Rocks and soda and his stomach exploded?
It's not an urban legend. It's true.
It's true. What? It's not my podcast. Not true. It's an urban legend. Mikey's stomach didn't explode.
And come on, what?
No, you know, your stomach wouldn't explode either. Mikey is alive and well.
So between that and my sister lying to me when I was like, "Why sticky from the Chinese restaurant?" She said, "Because they put glue in it, and I would never have white rice after that." I mean, these are things that are really ruining my entire youth. This is like very bad.
My sisters told me that because I swallowed a quarter once to just be a brat, that I was going to shit out an entire dollar bill. That it once it got into my stomach, that it would like start, I guess, accumulating interest in my simple mind.
Why are older sisters so evil? Really? She told me that if I had watermelon seed, it would grow in my stomach. And I believed it.
Same. And then you're up all night. You're like, okay, what do I do? What do I do? I'm going to have a watermelon in my stomach. Yeah.
I'm like always spitting out watermelon. Of course you should anyways, but like really spitting them out.
Well, now they make them seedless. But yeah, Paula Poundstone used to do this bit where she would mess with her own nieces and nephews and tell them that she could take off her head. And I was just like, fucking genius. I also have a friend who taught his nephew to speak with a British accent, which is also genius.
You know, you didn't ask me my favorite toy.
What was your favorite toy?
A little rolling Mr. Potato Head.
Oh, rolling?
Yeah, I could sit on it. Like I could roll on it in the house. Maybe it was like, this is, well, that was in the 70s. Shit.
Yeah, you're going back. I mean, I had a big wheel, but it wasn't a Mr. Potato Head big wheel.
But you know, Joe, I before we go, like I am a 70s kid from Pittsburgh, so I do have the terrible towel because, you know, we're four Super Bowls. And so I got to make sure that people saw that. You're talking to, like, you grew up in the 70s in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
City of champions, black and gold.
It made a lot of Steelers fans out all over the... My ex-husband is a Steelers fan because of all that shit, too. And I'm like, I get it. I don't get it. I'm a lifelong Giants fan, so I don't... Although I had a minute with the former Redskins. I don't know what that was all about. But yeah, I love that you have that towel because you're, first of all, that cool, but also that old. So with that said, we are going to...
I deserved it.
That thing's worth $1 million. It's an antique. Somebody described something from the early 2000s being vintage yesterday, and I almost punched them in the face. I was like,
oh, God, help us.
Yeah, vintage. I'm like, oh, I am so beyond vintage. I'm like, yeah.
Am I an antique? Is that what we are?
Our birthdays are closer to like the 20s than they are to like the 2000s. So that's fine.
Yeah, my daughter told me that the other day. That was really sweet.
Super depressing. Well, that does it for today's episode of the Are You Effing Kidding Me podcast. Joel, I know you've got exciting things you're working on that you're going to be talking about soon that are coming. We can't talk about them now, maybe, but we're just going to say stay tuned.
Yes, ma'am. Stay tuned, everyone. We'll try to figure out a way to get into the kinds of things learning from my guru, Joe, you know, about how to talk about things that you care about in a way that is out and public and accessible and engaging people. That's I'm going to try to hop on that train a little bit, but only if I can have the guidance and wisdom of JoJo, because you are a superstar.
Everybody knows that, but for real, Joel, guys, everyone out there listening and watching, this is an incredibly special human being. And when it comes to these issues that people don't understand and they're afraid to like really engage with because they're like, oh, I don't really understand that. It's so intimidating and you're worried that you'll look like an idiot or sound like an idiot. Just listen to Joel. He's a trusted, vetted resource. He knows what he's talking about, but he also makes it so that you can understand it. And he's a human being, and his authentic self is a gift to the universe. And I am grateful to know you. And I'm so excited for everything that's coming in the future. Well, with that, again, thank you, Joel. And everybody, thank you very much for listening and watching.
Great fun.
We'll see you next time. Bye.
Are You Effing Kidding Me? Is a production of the Political Voices Network. Please visit us at politicalvoicesnetwork.com.